For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. Well, it's been a while since we've done a recap. It's been 2 weeks, but with Father's Day, appendix surgery, all that, and we see how busy we both, all three of us are with everything going on with the big team. So we apologize, but nevertheless, we're back for, I think this is week 13, week 14 of the Tiger Minor League report and the season overall. I'm Ray Lucas, Sam is Chris Brown and David. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, and Stitcher, and our Patreon's scrolling below. And we're going to have some video out. We've been, like I said, it's been a busy few weeks on our end, but there's been a lot going on in the last 2 weeks that we're going to catch up with. And especially with the back and forth between Erie and Toledo's picking up again in terms of call-ups, so Riley Green go up to Detroit. So we might do a little Riley Green montage kind of thing and talk about that. Pretty much now he's graduated, who's the number one prospect of the Tigers? So that is the debate we're going to have here. Well, I'll start the debate, and then it's probably going to go through in the week. But, gentlemen, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Yeah, I mean, doing pretty good. Tigers took a rough loss today. It was tough to see that, but took 2 out of 3 against the Diamondbacks, so I was happy to see that. It always makes me just a tad bit happier during the week if the Tigers can have a good go at it. So
yeah, especially because Bally Sports reminded us that they're going to San Francisco for the first time since the 2012 World Series.
We all remember how that went.
Oh yeah, that was a good old time. And it does feel like a lifetime ago because it was a lifetime ago. But nevertheless, we move on and we start with the Mud Hens. And the Mud Hens this week split the series with Rail Riders. Okay, sometimes they go by the Pigs, though, right? Don't they have the Iron Pigs, or am I just
that was the Phillies, wasn't it? The Mahoning Valley, or
this is the Yankees affiliate. Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
But before we get into the pitching for Toledo, the one thing I want to say is I think it was pretty impressive how Toledo was able to split that series against Scranton, because like if you look at Scranton Wilkes-Barre's roster. Like, you can swear that if there was a 31st expansion team in the MLB, like, Scranton Wilkes-Barre's roster would probably look a lot like that. So that's fair to say. It was pretty interesting to see that we were able to split a series, like, the good old Toledo Mud Hens. Because, yeah, it's like, I was looking at their lineup during the week, and I'm like, wow. It's like, 9 of these guys, all this whole lineup has substantial big league service. So, yeah, it was nice to see us really battle through that series.
Yeah, and the Yankees are one of those organizations that tend to have it's. You want to look more at their AA affiliate more. I mean, Chris, is that safe to say? Because usually AAA is kind of a cast off of veterans for them, but AA for the Yankees has a lot of their top end talent.
Yeah, for the most part. But there's always AAA teams that will have a prospect or two. Like they have Peraza playing shortstop in Scranton now. He had, I think.
Oh, yeah, forgot about that. Good call.
And then you like think back to the year Nick Castellanos spent basically a full season in Toledo before going to Detroit for September. So there are teams, and the Yankees are so good this year that any prospects that might be breaking in kind of unless there's a big injury, they're not coming up. So it's probably better than your average AAA team in terms of prospect talent. But yeah, and generally speaking, you're going to find the more exciting prospects at AA and below.
Yeah, I mean, and they saw Miguel Andujar, who's been playing the outfield, by the way. And so it was one of those things I saw a tweet about that today where people were saying, well, they still have Joey Galloway, to get the former Ohio State receiver for some strange reason, but Joey Gallo, but it said they're not going with that Miguel Andujar, but who's having a good year, he's batting over 300. But yeah, you're absolutely right, David. There is this team does have a embarrassment of riches, including the fact that they have a former Tiger in Shane Green in their bullpen. So
he's I just noticed that today as well. It's like, wow, how'd he get over there?
Yeah, he was he got dropped by the, I believe it was the Dodgers, and then the Yankees picked him up. The former, he started his career as a Yankee, so this hopefully maybe this will help him get back in the majors. We shall see. But yeah, let's start with the pitching this week. They were outscored by Scranton, by the way, 25-19. Sam Howard, which is a name that we haven't really discussed too much because he was he's one of the Tigers signees they signed about 2 months ago. They signed a Fury, about 4 or 5 minor league arms, and he made 2 appearances this week, 1 run, 2 Ks. We'll talk about him in a second, but I do want to talk about Ryan Garcia. And David, in terms of what you've been seeing from him or in the last couple of weeks or so, Garcia, again, could not – his K per nine was always a struggle on the major league level. Has K per nine, or is he striking out more batters in AAA?
Yeah. So wait, what's your question exactly?
Is Brian Garcia striking out more batters, in other words?
Oh yeah, it's like when you watch him with Detroit. Unfortunately, I think it was the right situation at the wrong time for Brian Garcia when he came up with the Tigers, because like he was just coming off of TJ or Tommy John, and he was lighting it up with Ed Erie, and then that happened, and then we were like, yeah, he'll pitch the same, just put him on the big league roster, and we'll see. And then, yeah, you can tell that there were some games that we saw Brian Garcia in, with the exception of, I think it was like 2018, right? He put up like a 2-point-something ERA with the Tigers. But like, as of recently, you just saw him get overmatched on the big league roster. But yeah, it's nice to see that he's starting to get that form back that you saw, especially in that his pre-big league years in the minors. It's like you saw that he's starting to get the snap back on his slider, which was his plus pitch before he came up. And yeah, the fastball velocity is starting to come back. It's like, correct me if I'm wrong, but he seemed like normally a 2-pitch pitcher to begin with, but it's nice to see that. Yeah, it's like he's a little bit better version of Al Albuquerque, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was going to say the Al Albuquerque had that, what's it called, the Bugs Bunny slider.
Yeah, right? So I'm looking at Garcia's got 21 strikeouts and 28 and 2/3 innings in Toledo, so it seems like it's still the same. He's learned how to get outs, but he's not missing bats still. So I don't know. Like I said, they may run at him. You mentioned Sam Howard. He's on the 40-man, I believe. And that's just, they always want left-handed relief depth. But Garcia, we may see him. You never know when somebody, relievers kind of get burned up pretty quickly. So Garcia is there and available. They're talking about re-signing Drew Hutchison soon. So any arm in a storm.
Yeah, I mean, who did we swap out on the 40-man for Howard?
I don't think they swapped anybody. I think it was just, somebody was on the 60-man
IL. I was trying to look for that, and couldn't seem to find anything on the transactions. But, yeah, it was weird to see. Yeah, that kind of surprised me.
I mean, they've added 4 or 5 guys to the 40-man this year, and I'm trying to think. They DFA'd, what, Garneau and Barnes and Hutchison twice, I think. That's it, I think. So, they just created room through other means, basically.
I saw somebody angry tweet about that, about Drew Hutchison. He elected free agency. He hasn't signed back, is he?
They said they're going to re-sign him this week. They're expected to re-sign him this week.
Are they actually? Right. They're really doing him dirty, aren't they? They're really doing Drew Hutchison dirty, aren't they?
If he's looking for jobs and nobody else is giving him a chance to pitch in the majors, like, I'm sure they're upfront with him, like, hey, we're going to sign you and then we're going to cut you. And it's not like, I don't think they'll be like, hey, maybe this time. It's not like Lucy with the football. I think they're like, hey, man, we need you. We appreciate it. Earn some more service time. Maybe somebody else sees you again.
The fourth time.
Well, yeah, but like, even with the seldom pitching performances that he's made with the Tigers thus far, it's like he hasn't exactly been horrible. It's like he didn't look the best last year, some of the performances he made, but like you're watching him coming out of the bullpen and made those couple spot starts, and like it's like you can't say that he's not a serviceable major league pitcher. It's like he's been looking pretty decent.
I think he's like I still think he's a bullpen arm, in my opinion.
Well, he's another guy who doesn't really miss bats anymore. I think he did when he was younger, but yeah, they just they're there's a comfortability there, right, with the guy that they've had in their organization. So they're like, hey, we can count on you to go out there and compete at least. They know that much. And it's, you know, they moved Wentz to the 7-day IL in Toledo just last week, I think. I don't know what they had him at before then. But, you know, a lot of those depth arms are kind of disappearing. Elvin pitched today.
And then, you have Michael Pineda, who was on rehab assignment, and he did a couple starts. We'll talk about that in a second. Daz Cameron's back at Toledo after his rehab assignment. And also, the Tigers traded Ryan Lavoie to the Marlins, who he was with at one point. And they signed a catcher. And the reason why is because they signed catcher Ali Sanchez from the Cardinals, the former Met, who was signed by the Mets as an international signing, I believe, in 2016. And he's known more for his defense than, I guess, his raw hitting tool, raw power tool, but it's not showing up at all. But he's had a couple cups of coffee, say that twice again, with between the Mets and St. Louis. So they have a veteran catcher down there to add to with Garneau. And also there was somebody posted that Jake Rogers has been thrown again. So maybe in the next month or so, we'll hear some news on Rogers turn up, so we'll see what happens. But as far as getting back to the arms, Pineda this week, 2 starts, he looked like typical Pineda, just kind of gets allows hits, he pitches a contact, doesn't have the strikeout stuff like he used to. And but the starter of the week is Garrett Hill, 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, no walks, and 5 strikeouts. So that's a good thing to see, especially for if the Tigers want to decide to put him in the bullpen or how they want to see fit for that. So I think we got some video of that too. We gotta put up some video, man.
From Garrett Hill?
Yeah.
He looked pretty good in that start. Well, one thing I really liked about Garrett Hill watching that start is really consistently repeating his delivery. It's like he got in and out of the stretch a couple times in some of his innings. But yeah, it's like just seeing how repeatable he is when he's pitching, it's pretty consistent to see, and it's nice to see. Because like once you get that motion down, then it's all about throwing strikes, and that's what he did today.
Oh, I should clarify, Chris. I recorded part of Hill's start, and I haven't had a chance to. That's what I mean, but and in terms of hitting the long awaited debut of Kerry Carpenter at Toledo, after Erie just fell short in the first half of the playoff run. And that was the reason why Erie was waiting. The Tigers were possibly waiting to call him up. He went 3-for-6 this week. Yeah, 3-run homer. He had 4 RBIs and a double. And that included the Bowie series, right, David?
Well, I think he was having a pretty rough series with Bowie before he got the call to Toledo. It's like I think he only had like 1 or 2 hits and like 5 or 6 at-bats or so. So, I mean, yeah, he was going through it, but yeah, it's like, it's nice to see. It's like, this could also be the, I'm going to call it the Akil Badu syndrome of not a whole lot of people having very much video on you. And then you come up to the new league and just crush it. It's like, of course it's like, I'm not going to buy in on the Kerry Carpenter and Toledo hype just yet. I want to give him like maybe a week or two with Toledo just to see where he would iron out right there. But it's nice to see that like, it looked like he was putting the bat to the ball really good, especially if you watch that home run. It's like, looked like he got all of it there. I mean, granted, it looked like the pitcher, I couldn't tell if it was a slow fastball or like a really, just like really flat breaking ball. But yeah, it just looked like he saw it really well and he put some good contact on it.
As far as his numbers in Erie are concerned, in June, he was batting .241 with 5 home runs and he had 21 strikeouts to 4 walks, which is, Chris, like you and I have talked about this numerous times about, you know, 24 years old doing that in Double A, he should be doing that, and about his prospect status. And so there's this, I don't know if people are joking about it or not, but he should be in the Tigers offense. But I it's good that he's in Toledo, but I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, no, I don't. That's not happening anytime soon. We saw the same thing with Cody Clemens, right? Call him up. They finally called him up, and it took him, he went like 0 for 15 or something like that. Finally, seems to be doing his thing, got a home run the other day. But, Double A is worlds away from the majors, and if you're not taking any walks and striking out at a high rate, you're not going to succeed. It was cool to see him come up and hit immediately. I mean, we kind of saw something like that last year with Ryan Kreidler, where we and he was hitting well in Erie and it was starting to get better and better, and then he got called up to Toledo. We were there for the first game, and he hit a home run. We're like, huh, all right. So yeah, sometimes guys, they get that, you know, they can start smelling the majors and they lock in a little bit, but I don't know. Yeah. I think it's, and we hinted before, if not outright said, like, we think he's in Erie because they're trying to make the playoffs. Right.
Right.
And they wouldn't care about the playoffs in Double A if he was a prospect they felt like they could help them in the majors. Right. Like if they thought this is a guy who could help the Maple Leaf team this year, we're not going to keep him in Double A to make the playoffs, but they don't plan on him coming up to the majors this year. So they kept him in Double A because they wanted Erie to get, you know, a taste of the postseason, which they haven't had in 10 years. And unfortunately, they came one game short.
Yeah. And that's all it is. I mean, in Erie, these are like the way Erie's had some problems with the bullpen, which we've talked about quite a bit. Garrett White, we'll talk more about that here in the next segment. But overall, Erie's had a good year in terms of the rotation. And offensively speaking, they began a spark from Winseal Perez and Parker Meadows from West Michigan. So there's that, and we can get to that in a second. But yeah, it's Carpenter to Toledo. David, you said you're going to examine that a little bit more as the next couple weeks go on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's like, and like you mentioned, Chris, like the walks are pretty concerning. It's like, of course, it's always exciting to hit home runs, but like with that, you tend to get a little bit more of an aggressive mindset to the plate. It's like the first thing your mind is set on is like, I'm going to keep this going and I want to go deep here. So I don't know. It's maybe, of course, it's going to be rough to say, you know, just don't focus on hitting home runs so much as trying to get a better view of the strike zone. But yeah, it's like that's the one thing I really want to see. It's like, I want to see him taking more. It's like the more patient you can be. And like, even if we can see like, 5 walks and 20 at bats, it's like I would be happy with that. It's like, yeah, plus I want to see hitting more singles as well. It's like that's the one thing I think he was lacking. It's like you can tell when a hitter starts to overextend and tries to just put the ball over the fence every at bat. And yeah, as soon as I can start seeing like slash more singles and take more walks, then yeah, I'm like I'll start to buy into it a tad. But right now it's like I'm not sold on it.
Not to change the subject too much, but real quick before we get to Erie, one of the things that was interesting as we approach the draft coming up, and we're in the middle of a season. We all know we're in the middle of the season, but LSU is hiring Twins pitching coach Wes Johnson for the same role in the middle of the season. That's I don't know, Chris. What's your thoughts about that?
It's very unusual. First of all, Wes Johnson, I believe they hired him from Arkansas.
Yeah.
I think he was the pitching coach at Arkansas. And he's been the pitching coach at Twins, and the Twins have done some pretty good things with their pitching, at least throughout the system. You know, they haven't been, like, dominant at the major league level, but they've been pretty good at, you know, Joe Ryan developing him and some other arms in there. So, I know what's weird, like, LSU, not only did they get him, they also just got 2 huge transfers. They got Tommy White, you know, that freshman from NC State. He's leaving NC State, going to LSU. And I've forgotten. Oh, the Christian Little, I think, from Vanderbilt, leaving Vanderbilt to go to LSU. So they're doing something down there at LSU to really – I think it's kind of like in the age of NIL. They're one of the teams, like, we've seen what Texas A&M is doing in football. They're just like, yeah, we'll just go ahead and spend $25, $30 million. I think LSU is trying to, you know, fashion itself as the top destination in college baseball. And they poached Arizona's coach last year and Arizona's best hitter. So I think, yeah, they're just, I don't know. If you're an LSU baseball fan, you got to be pretty happy about that. But it is very strange for the Twins and for Twins fans. I don't know if there's, you know, maybe chemistry issues there, or maybe, you know, the second in command in terms of pitching is basically deserving. And, you know, Les Johnson's like, yeah, he deserves the job. I'm going to go take this job. Maybe he just likes living in Louisiana. I don't know.
Yeah, it also doesn't help. I mean, again, maybe some of the boosters down in the SEC schools got some big FU money. They got some money.
Yeah, I mean,
only throw around.
I mean, that's what I mean. Like, it's like an extension of what's going on with that golf tour. Like, the people down in he might he's taken on the same role, right? Pitching coach from a major team down to a college team. Ordinarily, that would be probably a huge pay cut. But with the pocket these people have down there, he could be getting more money.
That could be a work balance thing, too.
I mean, yeah, for sure. You have to recruit now, but.
I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, Chris, but you want to hear my two cents on it?
Sure.
This is going to sound kind of backwards, but hear me out. It's like my first thought when you say that is this is the equivalent really of wanting to be a college teacher over a high school teacher. Like if you think about it this way, it's like you're a major league pitching coach, right? And I'm sure you deal with half your pitching staff is probably the rookies that you're trying to mold from the minor leagues, but have pretty much been through their development steps leading up to the major leagues. And then the other half, you have your veterans that, like, you know, they probably tell our pitching coach, it's like, yeah, I'm going to get my bullpen in. It's like your suggestions are noted, but I usually have my rhythm and I know what I want to do. So, like, when you look at the college circuit, it's like you still have a lot of guys down there that, like, I'm not going to say projects, but, like, you know, you got to put every single experience and words of wisdom that you have about pitching into these guys on a pitching staff. And especially in college, it's like you have a lot of young guns down there, needless to say, and they'll probably say, like, you know, I'm trying to get X amount of miles an hour more on my fastball and not focusing on, you know, honing in the strike zone and learning control and command. And that's something that a coach with major league experience could want to do. It's like, just try and mature guys up a little bit more and just give them his words of wisdom that, like, people in the major leagues may already know.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. Definitely. Let's go to Erie, because Erie is the offensive bats for Seawolves have kind of busted out a little bit. They finished just one game back of the playoffs. They finished the first half of the season at 39-30, easily the best record of any affiliate in the Tiger system. And they outscored the Bay Sox 32-17. And in terms of pitching, it's this kind of same story. Austin Bergner, 6 innings, 8 hits, 6 strikeouts, but he's been pitching solid as of late. Reese Olson, in terms of that was his first really bad, I don't know, bad start, but it was, you know, in terms of
it was a must-win game. Like every game this week was a must-win game because they were, I think they began the week 2 games behind Richmond and Akron. And it was a tough look in a must win game to only go 4 innings and give up, what was it, 4 or 5 runs? 4 runs.
Yeah. It was frustrating to see. But you talked about this, Chris, and the other night when we were in Lansing for the game that Wilmer Flores did not have his best stuff, but still pitched very well his last couple outings. And the answer to the question we had to answer on YouTube real quick, Hill, Olson, or Carpenter get the call up this year. On all three, I think it'll be Hill. I think Olson just still needs some time before he does that. But Chance Kirby, who was the Eastern League pitcher of the week, I believe, last week. I think that's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he pitched strong. He's been pitching really good. 6 innings, 1 run, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts for the week. And in terms of the offensive profiles, this is the month of Andre Lipsius. 12 for 25, 2 doubles, 2 home runs, 6 RBIs. Slash line 355, 41, and 548 in the month of June. Dave Myers, again, org guy. Chris has talked about this numerous times. We all talked about this, how Dave Myers just does his job. And Winsfield Perez hit his first double-A home run. But, again, him and Parker Meadows have both been a spark for the Seawolves offense, which kind of leads to the fact that West Michigan has been struggling on offense. But, nevertheless, I digress. But, gentlemen, in terms of offensive profiles that stand out to you guys, what stood out to you in Erie this week?
Well, the one thing I like is you touched on it, Raj, but like Andre Lipsius, yeah, like that man has ate his Wheaties and he found some. It's like we were really, I'm not going to say getting down on him when the double A season started, but you know, he wasn't having the best go at it to start the season, but like it was nice to see him like start to hit for more power and like he's just working counts, he's driving guys in, and it's like it's just nice to see all the mechanics and all, like, because, like, you know, none of us ever see the work that players put in behind the scenes, and like, you know, you could be like fixing or tweaking, like moving your hands from here to here, or like just doing these little things and it's still not working out. And, you know, it's rough, especially when you're in double A and, like, you know, you're so close, you can feel the next step coming. But yeah, it's like some, the stars align for Andre Lipsius, and it's just nice to, it's just really nice to see that happening.
Yeah, we've seen Lipsius. He's flashed at least above average power. We've seen it a bunch in batting practice. He'll go deep to the opposite field. But yeah, it wasn't really translating to games. And if you recall, he hit for a fair amount of power in his junior season at Tennessee. Was kind of going to be one of his. He hadn't really before that, so it was a little bit suspicious. But it was like, yeah, we know it's in there. So, and that's the thing that was missing from his game, right? Because he walks plenty. He plays really solid, steady defense at multiple positions. And now if he's going to hit for some power, then suddenly it becomes a little bit more intriguing. It's still probably utility player profile, but he's getting closer to that ceiling.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if we're done talking about Lipsius, but I wanted to touch on Gage Markman as well. That's another guy. I just thought that, like, it's nice to see it starting to work out here for him a little bit. It's like, I know the two blowout games that Erie had this past series are kind of inflating the numbers a little bit for some of the hitters, but yeah, it's nice to see that, like, you know, it's been hard to find positives for Gage Workman so far this Erie season, but yeah, it's nice to see him starting to find a swing from both sides of the plate. Like I've been preaching this every show we've done so far. It's always just a tad bit harder when you're a switch hitter, because, like, you have twice as much work to do as the normal hitter. And you have to make sure that your swing from both sides of the plate is on both nights, because you never know who you're going to face. And this is, the swing was looking really good out of Gage Workman this week. It's nice to see him putting it together. I'm not, like I said, the two blowout games really inflated it. I'm not going to put all my money on the table just yet, but I'll put like one chip, and I like what I saw.
It was interesting because, yeah, you know, the issue with the Workman is always going to be contact and strikeouts, and I think he still had 10 strikeouts and 2 walks this week. But when you watch the games, some of those at-bats were incredibly long. I think he had an 11-pitch at-bat that ended up in a strikeout, unfortunately. But, yeah, he was really battling in a lot of plate appearances. So, he's just such an up-and-down player that I don't even know what to make of him really anymore. Like, he's just going to have to show me. Like I say, he feels like a 2-year Erie player to me.
Yeah. The thing about Workman is, too, is that for all we know how talented he is on defense. We all know that he has that ability to go all fields and hit with power. But the downside about it is that I feel like some of those bad habits are still going to, he's going to have to see another cleaning up of his bad habits. Of just sometimes just going in and having these quick at bats where he's down in 3 or 4 pitches on a strikeout. So that's my take on it. I think that maybe the next year they work on the ability for him not to necessarily, I don't know if he's ever going to draw walks because you are what you are, but perhaps just to hit for maybe just for average consistently. But nevertheless,
yeah, and it seemed like, sorry about that, but yeah, honestly, it's unfortunate, but it seemed like the case for a couple of Erie hitters so far this year. It's like Parker Meadows, he got the step up to Erie, and it looked like he was struggling a little bit to get a good view of the strike zone. I know it sounds weird when you say, like, you know, these hitters that are getting their shot in the minor leagues to find a good view of the strike zone, but it is moving up from league to league. It could be pretty hard. You're seeing new pitches. You're seeing guys that have, like, a lot more plus stuff than you did in your previous level. But yeah, it's like sometimes a hitter just needs to find their way to the strike zone. And I think that was it was hard for a lot of, like, we saw it with Daniel Cabrera as well. It's like, came up to Erie and he was not looking like the Daniel Cabrera we were expecting. And yeah, it was nice to see a payoff for Meadows and Workman today. But yeah, it's like, that's just something that some of the Erie hitters in the lineup needed to work on, just trying to get the hone in the strike zone better and, like, know what pitch you want to swing at and when. And but yeah, it's nice to see some of it going well for some of the guys this week.
Yeah, and again, it's there's been more talk about this, and Chris mentioned this last week as far as potentially Winciel Perez getting a spot on the 40-man roster seems like it's more of a possibility. Chris, you still stand by that statement? Because I, you know, when you said, I started looking at it, and I know second base right now, you have, there's a big void there, but however, he has stone hands. Does that really matter?
It's not the hand so much as the arm. He just, he makes so many bad throws that seem absolutely routine that it's kind of unbelievable. Like, he'll make throwing errors from 30 feet away at second base, like Chuck Knoblauch style. Or I don't know any other second baseman who might be younger that David might know. But yeah, like, the offensive numbers are spectacular this year. He's I was looking it up. So he's 22, right? He's 22 and he's in double A. He spent most of the year in high A. But his first week at double A has been pretty good outside of not walking yet. And he's hitting 290 plus with – he's got 10 home runs now. He's got 13 steals. And he's got a strikeout rate under 20%. He is one of two players in minor league baseball who can say that. The other one is Gunnar Henderson, who is like a top 30 overall prospect in baseball. Now he's doing it at 20, but still, like these are really outstanding stats that, you know, if Cary Carpenter weren't around, I'd probably be pushing for Winciel Perez as the, you know, Tigers minor league hitter of the year. I think a guy like that in double A, who had some prospect pedigree, right? He was on a like top 10 list, I think, or at least close to it 2, 3, 4 years ago, kind of finding it again. I think they're going to add him. I think they're going to add Meadows and Perez to the 40 man in the offseason. But we'll see. I mean, like, I don't know if it's always a bit of a gamble, right? Like, you think, yeah, they might get taken, but they're not going to stick. So that's kind of what you have to deal with.
Especially, you know what, I will say I'm pretty kind of, I'm not gonna lie, pretty surprised in the outcome with Parker Meadows, that originally saw that transition to Erie and was like, oh boy, here we go. But he's picked it up and he's showing it, and he can, it's nice to see. I mean, finally, that it wasn't just him just graduating from West Michigan that we're just like celebrating that. We're celebrating actual real progress with him. So
he starts doing some parachute drills, in my opinion. It's like, this is gonna sound weird, but like, I was watching him track some fly balls in the outfield recently. It's like, he looks like he's carrying a piano around his back. But yeah, other than that, it's like, it's like I said, I'm gonna give credit where credit's due, and it's nice to see Parker. We always knew it was there with Parker Meadows. It's like, we saw it in West Michigan this year. It's like, granted, we all thought the promotion at Erie was a little bit premature, but yeah, it's like you said, Raj, it's nice to see progress being made.
Yeah.
So he went, what, 3 for 4 today with a walk and a home run. I'm just trying to do his stats on the fly right now, because in June he's only hitting, it's a 690 OPS, but that's much better than his 570 in May. I think, you know, Meadows to me is like the Bizarro workman. Like, there's some tools there. But Meadows has always done a decent job of controlling the strike zone. He doesn't strike out a ton. He walks a decent amount. He just never hits the ball hard or at least he didn't until this year. And he did for about a week, and we got excited. And then he didn't again for like 6 weeks. But he's picked it up in the last 3 or 4 weeks in double A, which is what you want to see. And I think, like, not to spend too much time on, but like I said, I think that we'll probably see him go out to the Arizona Fall League, because that's where they send players who are like, they're kind of on their – the fringes of the 40 man, and they'll watch to see how he performs against some of the better minor leaguers, and then maybe they'll add him. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Can't really, again, it's just like, I'm just glad we're having this conversation right now about Parker Meadows. So yeah. Let's move on to West Michigan, and the Whitecaps pretty much, they have a split. They split in two different ways. Scoring 25-25 and 3-3 at Cedar Rapids. So they finished for the first half of the season 31-35. They're now 2-1 in the second half of the season. And speaking of things that could go up to Erie soon, and Chris mentioned this earlier, this might be the last start for Ty Madden in a West Michigan Whitecaps uniform. Brilliance today. Another strong outing. He's been at 97-98. It looks like he's been hitting a groove. Dylan Smith this week, 5 innings, 2 runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. And Brant Hurdler, who was called up for Lakeland a couple weeks ago, has been also fit and pitching decently for the Whitecaps. And another guy who I saw in Lakeland who I really liked was Carlos Mendoza. He's up with Michigan, so that's changed the last couple weeks. And yeah, he has been very, very good defensively. He shows a really good range at third. There was a couple plays last week in Peoria where he was just gunning it and then just flashing leather on third and at second. And then Jake Colton, who was the Whitecap player of the week or the month, I think it was. I can't remember.
I think it was a week.
It was a week. Okay. I don't know why I said month, but he also has a steady performer in terms of the bats. There's not one of the right home about bats. It's been struggling, and the bullpen has been imploding a couple times recently. But Dave, I'll start with you. What stood out to you this week at West Michigan among the pitching?
Well, yeah, it's like you look at, I mentioned it the last show about Ty Madden, and it's really nice to see, because, like, you know, we were talking about the rough go at it that Ty Madden had in, like, what was it, like, early May? It was something like that. It's like kid just could not catch a break. It's like, it's always nice to see, because, like, I was talking about it last show, and it's like, it really looked like it was the same case going forward these last two starts. It's like, it looked like he wasn't trying to. He had a pretty good mix of not trying to overpower hitters. Like, he wasn't, in my opinion, the fastball velocity looked good, but it didn't look like he was trying to blow it by everybody every single pitch. It's like he was really mixing in he mixed in a lot of the arsenal pretty good. And like I said, only one walk in 10 innings. It's like, it was nice to see him really just hone in the strike zone. It's like just really putting together some good outings. And you're right, Chris. I think it would be interesting to see the next step in Erie. Like, in my opinion, I think, yeah, I don't think there's any much more he needs to prove, because, like, you know, the walks are down. It's like he's starting to throw the fastball for strikes. He's getting his breaking ball over, and yeah, it would be nice to see what the next challenge would bring for him.
Yeah, with Madden, it's kind of interesting though. Like, I suppose they could keep him down there if they wanted, because he hasn't been that sort of Flores dominant, you know, where he's just striking out 50% of the people. He's just basically not giving up any hard contact this month. So I just looking. So 25 innings in June, 12 hits allowed, 2 runs, 1 home run. That had been a worry, right? His first 2 months, he'd given up 8 home runs, 4 walks, 22 strikeouts. Batters are hitting 138 against him. It was a .075 ERA. And beyond that, this is just the time when guys get promoted, right? It's the middle of the season. It's you know, I don't know who they would bring up from Lakeland. They'd figure it out, or maybe they'd send somebody down from Erie. I don't know how they do it, but yeah, it seems like it's time for a new challenge for him. They held him to what, 63 pitches today. They gave him 5 innings, and he could have gone probably 2-3 more innings. but it's his first pro season, so they're trying to keep his innings down. But I do think that they will probably want to challenge him at some point, and I would assume it'll be soon. Seems like a good time to do it right now, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, Chris, you were talking about the home runs, and it's like, yeah, the one thing is that really is the cause of that is when you're just overthrowing and you're just trying to blow it by everybody, and the hitters start to catch up to it. You could throw your fastball too much, and needless to say, it starts going over the fence, because, like, as soon as hitters catch up to your fastball, it doesn't matter how fast it is, it's like as soon as you release one too soon or too late on a curveball, it's going to be a cement mixer right down the middle. It's going to go 500 feet. So, like, it's nice to see that I think personally the style changed a little bit. It's like you said, Chris, it's nice to see that, like, you're not focusing on just trying to blow by everybody, and you're focusing on soft contact, because sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you throw, that could be the case. It's like, as long as you keep it deceptive, and that was the case of Madden. It's like, his fastball looked good. It's like, it's not just like, in my opinion, watching the video, it's not just like a straight right down into the strike zone. It looks like it has some dip to it. But yeah, that's like, I honestly, in my opinion, I think if you guys have something to say, I don't think he has anything left to prove in West Michigan. I think he checked all the boxes for him.
Oh, go ahead, Rush.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think he has anything left to prove in West Michigan. That's just really it. Go ahead, Chris.
But no, I would like to see him go up to Erie and maybe get beat up a little bit, right? Like, you want to see somebody struggle and overcome it. So that's what I would like to see next. And if he doesn't get beat up, then all the better. But go up there and you know, face some hitters that are gonna challenge you more. That's what player development's about.
I want to see, like, that's a good point, Chris, because like the one thing I want to see is if he does get roughed up a little bit, I want to see like how it would be per se, because like, you know, if hypothetically Madden would use the system that he's been using in West Michigan so far, and he takes that into a start in Erie, and like all of a sudden double A hitters are roughing him up a little bit, I want him to think, stand there and think like, uh-oh, it's like, I was riding high on this setup of pitching today, and all of a sudden this is crumbling down around me. So what do I do? Actually, it would be nice to see how he would adjust properly to double A hitting. Cause like it is that you could see that there is a pretty decent difference in double A hitting when you move up to the next level. But so that would be nice to see.
As far as there was a question about Dylan Smith, and I think he'll maybe get a call up I think after the drafts, maybe for Dylan Smith. Just depends what's going on with Lakeland. But yeah, I think maybe after the draft.
Yeah, I mean, he's also been pretty solid this year. The only difference with him is his struggles have come more recently. So it might be a little bit harder to justify. So like in June, batters are hitting .345 against him. He was pretty darn good in April and May, and it's starting to fall apart a little bit on him this month. But that may just be he's walking more guys, not striking out as many guys. It may just be him getting tired. He's also pretty young. I think he just turned 22 in May. So I could see him getting called up as well. But he's a guy who you could justify keeping him in West Michigan based on his recent performance, I think.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I mean, it's been unfortunate with Dylan Smith, because I think, Chris, you've said it a couple times before. Dylan Smith has always been kind of like the tale of two pitchers. Like, he hasn't really put in that median start where you can get a gauge for like what he has and like what he could bring to the table in terms of like, you know, getting roughed up in one inning, then coming back and just adjusting yourself maybe through like the second time in the lineup or even the third time in the lineup. But I'd just like to see some of that. Like, I don't want to see, or of course it would be nice to see, but the scoreless innings would be pretty good. But like I said, I just want to see that middle ground. It's like with Dylan Smith, it's either been he's getting blown up or he's like just lighting the world on fire. So it'd be nice to see like what a really good middle ground Dylan Smith looks like.
No, that's a good way to look at it, because if especially West Michigan would probably want him if stick around and give them a chance to as a draw, just as a draw some more tickets and more fans and some good crowds over there. So, because if Madden goes, then the question is who would come up from Lakeland. And speaking of the Flying Tigers, we have a question in our chat from good old Walter Briggs. And he was asking, will Pacheco see any promotion this year? He hasn't been able to pay attention to the last month. And Pacheco, as far as his numbers go in June, we'll get to the pitching here shortly. But as far as what he's doing in the month of June, he's still hitting over 300. The just one home run for the month. So he's kind of fallen off in power wise. But Chris, I'll start with you in terms of Isaac Pacheco. He's still, in terms of walks, he has drawn this month, his walk to strikeout ratio is 5-11, which isn't bad. So it seems like he's showing more patience at the plate. But as far as him going up to West Michigan, I don't think. I mean, maybe till August, if at all. It's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's another one that's going to depend on the draft. And it's, you know, you got kind of a decent comparable between Pacheco and Colt Keith from last year. Colt Keith put up like an 870 OPS in high A or low A Lakeland in about 40 games last year, and Pacheco is about 100 points under that, but he's still performing it at a well above average level in the league for his age. So it's a case where you could justify bringing him up, I think, but you could also justify, and they used to do this all the time where they were just the first season of pro ball, they wouldn't mess around with guys, wouldn't move them, you know, because you're in Lakeland, you're most likely staying in the dorms, right? The Lakeland dorms. They move you up to West Michigan. You're with a host family. You're kind of on your own more, and maybe they think he's ready for that challenge. Maybe he's not. But sometimes it's more than just the baseball, right? So, yeah, I'm gonna check. Go ahead. I'm gonna check something real quick.
The one thing I'm gonna say about Isaac Pacheco is I really like the hit tool, because like that's essentially why we drafted him. It's like, I know we drafted him with he wasn't really sticking at a position. We didn't know if he was gonna play, what infield position he was gonna play, whether it be short, second, or third. He didn't really have the shortstop mobility. But the one thing I really want to see is this is kind of a throwback, and I don't want it to be just like this. But the one thing I want to see out of Isaac Pacheco is kind of like a watered down Brock Deathridge week. It's like I'd want to just kind of just go off and just hit everything in sight, because like if he can do that and like get the confidence to just keep that up a tad, then I would say like, yeah, maybe it'd be worth a shot. But like you said, Chris, it's like the hardest thing to do is like, especially moving you from like sunny Lakeland, Florida, all the way up to West Michigan, where it's like the scenery around you is going to be different. Like pretty much your whole world's going to be turned upside down. So like, I think just in my opinion, finishing out the year with Lakeland would be the best move for Pacheco, and just like giving him a fresh season, fresh start in West Michigan next year, depending on how he finishes. But that's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, he's not even 20 years old yet, so he doesn't turn 20 till I believe the fall, November. I believe in November he'll be turning 20 in November, so that could be the case. But if he's more than advanced, if they believe that, it just depends on how. And you know, Chris, I you're absolutely right. It just depends on what they do in the draft, because the Tigers might go bat, they might go pitch. Who knows. But the rest of West Michigan, Flying Tigers, they went 2-3 against the Fort Myers Muscle. Is it the Mighty Muscles? Oh.
Yeah, they used to be the Miracle.
Yeah.
The Mighty Muscles.
Yeah, Miracle is a dumb name anyways. Sorry.
I think there was also a pretty suggestive Mighty Muscles logo, if I can find it.
You looked that one up. I know what you're talking about. Lakeland, by the way, just finished 2 games under 500. All things considering, I think that's some good progress. The Flying Tigers have made some really significant progress this year, and they're now 1-1 in the second half. We'll talk about the Jackson Jobin 20 pitches mystery in Scooby-Doo style in the case of Jackson Jobin in a second. But Garrett Bernhardt, who I think would be the next guy to get called up to West Michigan should somebody like Ty Madden go up to Erie, had a good week. And you're absolutely right, David. You put that in the note. Carlos Pena, quote, needs to fill out his frame. He is a little dude. He looks like the size of David. I'm dead serious. He looks about your size, man. I'm dead. When I saw him up in person, because I was at Lakeland, he was in the bullpen, and you stood up, you're like, he looks like he's 16 years old. He doesn't look, you know, but he's going out there, and he's a lefty for the Flying Tigers, and he's a guy that can, you know, touch and feel kind of thing. And one of the guys that I was really excited about in Lakeland, but I was told to kind of, quote, calm down a little bit about him, was Esni Chacon, who's had a really good month of June in terms of, if you look at his numbers production wise, he's 27 for 78. So he's batting 346 in the month. He doesn't have a lot of power. He's not a power hitting guy. He's a speeds guy. He's a good contact hitter and has really good speed around the bases, and defensively pretty good out in the outfield as well. And he's having a really good month, so it's good to see that, because as far as Lakeland outfielders are concerned, there's not much to write home about, and that's even the case with the Florida Coast Tigers, which there's some numbers that Chris was telling me early on Friday, some of the scores. Yikes. And then Christian Santana, and Dave, you point this out, had a good series, and despite the struggles he's had in the month overall, Manuel Sequeira has been having a better month, but he is not hitting for average at all. And the walks have picked up on him. But the mystery starts with Jackson Job. Why did he pitch 20 pitches? David, do you have any idea?
I mean, like I was talking to Chris about it earlier today, and it's like my thoughts were like maybe some really crazy, some zany pitch ceiling. It's like I've never seen a pitch count limit be that low for a starter. But Yeah, I mean, it's just weird to see that because, like, you know, yes, he was throwing strikes pretty good, but yeah, like it's 16 strikes for 20 pitches, but like that's still, you can't just say like, oh, you're throwing strikes, that completes the assignment for today. It's like your day's done. But that was just my take on it. It's like, Chris, I know you had a lot better of an explanation than I did.
Well, I mean, we're all just throwing things out there. My thought was, you know, there was a ton of rain in Florida because it's Florida and it's the summer. And I don't know if he was scheduled to pitch Friday, but he was definitely scheduled. Friday was rained out. He was definitely scheduled to pitch the first game on Saturday. And then both those games were rained out. So I just wonder if maybe it was a situation where, like, he got up there and got warmed up and was getting ready to pitch, maybe even once or twice, and then the game was banged, and they still wanted him to pitch. So he went out today, and they just were being super cautious because it was basically like a bullpen session for him. Now, I did see one other thing, and I'm checking right now to verify this, because there's one other theory. Somebody in our Discord pointed it out, and I just got to – find this. Okay, 670-219. I'm checking the baseball Chris, data.
Yeah, what's Chris, that? while you're looking that up, it's like I made my other point here. And it's like, I don't know if this is the same for prep high schools or public school when I was in that time. It's like, you know, there's when you're a starter in the high school level and you're getting a pretty beefy amount of time between your starts. It's like, and you know, in that time, you're not exactly going over data or just doing throwing programs or anything like it. Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what level of high school pitcher you are, but that could be the case as well. And like, well, another thing we got to remember is that Job, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Job wasn't a primary baseball player his whole high school career, right? It's like he was a two-sport athlete, and like, didn't he just choose baseball his junior year or something like that? It was along those lines.
He played football. He was a quarterback, I believe. He was also a really good golfer, as you would expect. But yeah, he was a shortstop, and then became a primary pitcher his junior, basically the showcase season before his senior year. So yeah, I mean, he's a lot more raw than I think, certainly more raw than fans were expecting, and I think probably a lot more raw than the organization was expecting. At least the people who drafted him might have known, but the coaches were like, "Huh, I don't know about this." But the one thing that I wanted to point out, were you done with your point, David? I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess the only other thing I want to say is like, when you think about it, it's like when you're, well, especially like, I didn't even remember that when you brought it up, but like just picture that, you're casually making starts in high school and you're just starting to get back into pitching when you're sporadically pitching in high school. And then all of a sudden you make it into the, like, all, you're making it in the minor leagues, and all of a sudden the coach, you're like, okay, guess what? You're making starts every 5 days now. And like, you're going to be on throwing programs and you're going to be doing this, that, and the other thing. So like, I can imagine like when you're not a primary pitcher in high school to begin with, and you're just getting into it, it's like, that's like, in my opinion, that's the, like you said, that could be just the definition of being like an extremely raw pitcher.
So yeah, the one thing, and this is credit to, his name's Matt. I'm Eating Nachos, I think, was the one who pointed out in the Discord. But, you know, what do you think of when you think of Jackson Job? What was his calling card, right?
The slider.
Slider.
Guess how many sliders he threw today? Zero. He threw zero sliders today. So either something's hurting his arm and he can't throw sliders. That's the negative aspect. The positive aspect could be like, hey, you're going to go out and you're going to throw two innings today and you're not going to throw a single slider. We want you to see you compete and use your other pitches. And it's not like his slider's been super dominant, but I could see how they're just trying to, you know, develop him that way. So 10 fastballs, 6 curves, 3 changeups, 1 sinker. Got 3 whiffs on the fastball, 1 on the changeup. It could have been that. Could have been, who knows what it could have been. I don't know if any, we had anybody interview our Lakeland people down there to spy out what happened. Like, we knew that through them, we heard that Campos, I think he got a collision at home plate. He had a triple, got in a collision at home plate, and hasn't played since, which is a bummer. But I guess we'll find out. Yeah, unsolved mystery.
Yeah, I mean, for Job, like, I'm not sure, because like that's the thing with sliders. It's like, it's not exactly splitter territory. But the one thing about it when you're throwing a slider compared to a curveball is that you really have to just snap it off a lot harder. It's like with a curveball, you're not exactly supposed to take anything off of it, but like the arm action is different and there's a lot more wear on throwing a slider compared to a fastball. It's like, you know, even when pitchers are doing rehab assignments coming back from surgery or anything like that, it's like you have fastball bullpens first, and then depending on how your recovery is going, then you start throwing breaking balls. So I'm not going to say his arm is hurting.
Pure speculation. Here's more pure speculation. This is what I like to think they said. They said, hey, you're going to go out and you're not going to throw your slider till the third inning. So he went out and completed two innings. They said, and now you're done. You're not going to throw a third inning. Just to mess with his head. Like,
was he overthrowing his slider in Lakeland?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he just, you know.
I didn't think so. It's like watching the video, it didn't look like he was throwing like first pitch sliders or just like constantly trying to use it as a strikeout pitch. So,
yeah, I mean, I could check his game logs.
I think it could be a case where it's like they, you know, they got the music going. They're like, today, Job, you're going to pitch two innings, your challenge. And then they just put it on the board. And they just point to it. And they're like, and he just goes out there. Because it's just like some of it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I'm sure it makes sense for Gabe Rivas and everybody down there. You know, and they're all getting ready for him to do certain things. Like, okay, so now you're going to throw a fastball and you're going to thread it through this needle. Excuse me? I don't know. Maybe it's just something like that, but that's irresponsible speculation. It's Japanese Blaze of the Warrior. So it's similar to Zelda music. But... and then you see Job in a forest somewhere just doing one thing with one, like, he's somewhere in the Everglades fighting off the biggest python. By the way, it was pulled in the Everglades this week, or there was announced this week that a 250-pound python was pulled out of Florida Everglades, and it had a deer, a full-size deer in the mammal population. But anyways, can you imagine him, you know, him going on top of one of the swamps and just going, Job's getting, anyway, all right, montage.
Just to finish that, he threw the slider was his fourth most count pitch in his previous start, 14%. So... And both of his last two starts, his velocity has been down a little bit. So maybe, I don't know.
I mean,
it's all speculation, but
maybe. I hate to say it, but like, this is the last thing you want to hear when you're from your coaches when you're working on pitching development. Is the last thing you want your coaches to say is, we want you to take a little bit off your fastball because you can't throw it in the zone. Mm. It's like, hopefully that's not the case either. It's like, but that's where my brain goes first. And like, This is gonna sound kind of silly, but you mentioned, Rod, you mentioned that being in the woods, and I don't know why my brain went here first, but I don't know if you guys remember Kyle Ryan.
Yeah.
It's like I don't know. This is always the one thing I remember in spring training. They were telling a story about how in the off season he would go to Florida and alligator hunt.
Really, I did not know that.
Well, I think he's from Auburndale, which is right outside of Lakeland.
I don't know why my brain went there, and that story just kind of lives in my head rent free. It's like that's where my brain went first.
But the answer to the question about Campos is still having a really good month, and I put the answers in there. 16 for 53 in the month of June, batting over 300, and he's still doing this with not a lot of power. He's just doing a lot of line drives and what have you. So. As far as complex league goes, gentlemen, that's going to be 30 seconds worth of stuff. Chris, I want you to talk about some of the pitching numbers you explained to me Friday night.
The Florida complex league. So they, when we last checked, I believe that the FCL Tigers were 2-12 and had given up 108 runs in 106 innings, I think.
Yeah.
And then after that, the next game, I believe they lost 22-5. They actually have a decent offense, and you know, Adenso Reyes is down there, seemingly, you know, forever stuck in complex ball. But Abel Bastidas, who was one of their high priority signings last year, had a really good week: 7 for 19, 2 doubles, and a home run. I think it's his first home run stateside, so it's got to keep watching. But yeah, the pitching, boy, they don't have a lot of pitching down there, and I don't know, maybe they'll draft a bunch of high school pitchers and put them down there this year.
Yeah, it was tough to see the FCL the first week. It's like I didn't know it was gonna be that rough, because like it looked like the Clayton Campbell and Adin Sarayas and all those guys, they looked like they were really just putting together fantastic at bats. Like Clayton Campbell especially, it's like, I know we what was it, like the Australian League, is yeah, we signed him out of Australia, and it's like it looked like he was extending at bats pretty well. He was hitting for a decent amount of power, but it's like looking at the scores in that first week, it's like I wasn't able to catch this past week for the FCL, but like I was seeing, it's like, can't get this bad, can it? But like, unfortunately, yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, it's and that's not a good sign. Maybe in July, if we're having the same conversation a month from now, that's still not a good sign. I mean, as far as pitching goes, and that's when the emphasis now, if you think about it this way, maybe it makes sense now why Baseball America said their first two picks could be pitching, because maybe they look down there and they're like, I think it's safe to say there's not a lot of interesting hitters either. So the Tigers need everything, and we'll be ramping up the draft coverage here. So, but nevertheless, yeah, it just did not look good.
Yeah, but like, you know, I don't know if we touched on this in another show before, but like, you've heard this, like, I'm not going to say you heard this from fans, because all the fans have the same opinion of what they want the Tigers to do in the draft this year. But like, I kind of hold the same opinion, but not to the higher esteem. It's like, of course, if there's a pitcher that like you can't avoid taking in the first round, like, yeah, sure, go for him if he's like an undeniable talent. But like, I still believe it's like the Tigers need offense this year. It's like our hitting prospects are few and far between the charts. It's like, and honestly, like you said, I think, Chris, you said this before, it's like you can honestly find good pitching everywhere across the board. It's like we saw it with Skubal as well, took him in the sixth round. It's like, honestly, it's like, and one of our strengths in the system is developing pitching. So if we can really just play to our strengths, and you can draft pitching anywhere, but like if you just draft that pure talent hitter in the first round, that would be my okay sign.
Yeah, I didn't give any mind to the Baseball America mock draft, because it was just kind of, I don't think it was a mock draft based on what they were hearing. It was basically like, here are all our editors, and who would you pick at this spot? Like, and they're like, I like this guy. Had nothing to do with teams, I don't think. And, right. But I think they the one they did, like, hey, I can, this guy's named Jackson, he throws a breaking ball with a lot of spin, I'll take him. The Tigers like. But I pulled up the numbers for the FCL Tigers, if you want to hear them.
Yes.
It's a 9.15 ERA through 15 games. 9.15. The Astros Orange, by the way, have a 2.31 ERA. So 9.15 ERA, 118 hits, or 118 innings, 129 hits, 134 runs, 20 home runs, 99 walks.
And what's the Astros Orange ERA again?
2.31. 2.31.
Oof.
Yeah. That's
no, yeah. No words for that one. It's just like running out of excuses with the big club too. Just no excuse for this one.
Yeah, I got nothing. That's the way to end the podcast this evening, because honestly, I got nothing. So there's a couple of written articles this week. I've been neglecting. I have like two or three articles drafted and outlined. I just have not had a chance to do it, but I'm back almost to 100%. There'll be some stuff coming out on the minor league report. So go to TigerMinorLeagueReport.com or TigersMLReport.com and check out all the great content that will be hopefully coming out. Gavin, it's MIA. Hopefully we'll hear from Gavin here. And there's some stuff. We got some news to announce this week too, coming up, that we'll get closer to that. And so more details on that. But the draft show that we've done the last 3 years, this will be year three, technically, will be Sunday, July 17th. And that's going to be over at the Woodward Sports Studio. So more information on that, you go to woodwardsports.com, or if you want to go and check us out, or it's a pin to my profile on Twitter at Rajcast Baseball. So we'll be ramping up the draft coverage. And if there's any final thoughts for you guys before we get out of here this evening.
Yeah. Ole Miss won the College World Series. Good for them.
Oh yeah. Thank you for reminding me.
Did you watch the Red Wings thing?
I'm going to watch that as soon as I'm done here. Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was on my, it's on my DVR. I have not had a chance to watch it. I watched my nephew, by the way. Congratulations to my team Southgate, who advances to the semifinals, but they play the top seeded Taylor Central. So Taylor Central, as you know, Taylor Northwest won the Little League World Series. And so Taylor's drawn from a good pool. And according to my brother, they have a kid who's throwing 45, 50 miles an hour at 8 or 9 years old, which is pretty significant. So he's already thrown some heat. And if Southgate wins on Tuesday, they advance to the championship game. It's round robin style, of course. So if they lose, they have a chance to, you know, how that continues to work. But either way, they won today over Taylor Roundstown South, 14-5. So, David, do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Because I think this is hilarious. So we all know the Yankees, right? Big old New York Yankees, lighting the world on fire. I just want to really want to have a laugh today at their record setting mark of 16 straight hitless innings. So seeing that on Twitter today made me laugh reasonably hard. So that's my final thought.
And to answer Walter's question in our YouTube channel, I thought that the Woodward Pistons guys did a fantastic job. And yes, we're going to have Spencer, who's going to be running the camera. So we'll actually have, it's going to be chaos, but in a good way, but our way. I mean, if you watch the draft show last year, we had pretty good, even with all the audio issues, once I stopped talking and figured it out, it was fine. But yeah, we're going to have a technical director. So we're going to have multiple cameras. It's going to be the same production style you're going to see from Woodward that you've been seeing. So we're going to be on the main channel, I believe, as well. So looking forward to that a lot, because if there's one thing I've been liking since I've been joining Woodward is I have to do less work in terms of like the behind the scenes stuff. When you're recording, you're producing, you're doing the graphics, you're doing the social media, you're doing all that stuff. You know, Chris and I have all the stuff we do on a weekly basis. It to have help goes a long way. So yeah, I did jump in a pool last year, Walter, and I cannot, due to my appendix injury. Well, I probably could, by then I'd probably be medical clear to jump in a pool if I wanted to, but we'll figure out some sort of punishment. Maybe there'll be a pool of Jello or something. I don't know. I haven't talked to the Woodward guys yet, but I know that they liked the stunt I did last year. But this year, we're going to be in the studio because we're going to have Trevor Huth from Bless You Boys. We're going to have Brandon Day from Bless You Boys. We're going to have some guys from the Cleveland Guardian Insider. And then we have James Fox from the Future Sox. And Dan Hasty is a maybe. So Dan Hasty, the voice of the smooth, delicate, velvety smooth, Dylan, the voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps, will be joining us. So I used a lot of adjectives there that were blabbing together. But anyway, at any rate, Walter, Jeremy, and we also had, who else we had in the chat tonight? We had CY or C Willie or C.
Michelle Wee's relationship.
Yeah. I don't know. But either way, thanks for everybody for participating tonight on YouTube. Appreciate it. David, thank you for putting the show together outline. Much appreciated. And we'll talk to you next week with all the content available over at TigersMinorLeagueReport.com. Have a good night, everybody.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.